Welcome to Real Common Treatable. I'm Clint Malley. I'm joined by Lindsay Vass, our outreach ambassador with Sandstone Care. And today we're talking all about ADHD, specifically what do providers or behavioral health professionals need to know when it comes to working with teens with ADHD, talking to parents, making sure that they have all the tools. And we've got two experts in the field, but experts from experience, but also experts from the treatment side. So our expert today is Lauren Miller. So Lauren, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Clint. Excited to be here.
So Lauren, we know that this is a very close personal thing for you because you had it as a kid and it wasn't diagnosed early. And so there was probably like a lot of growing pains with that. So when it comes to teens having ADHD and not having it understood within the classroom, within life, like how does that affect the teen growing up?
Yeah, so I think during the earlier school years, it's easier to miss because there's not as much academic challenges, obviously. I mean, there's definitely things that you see early on with kiddos. I always talk about the hyperactive type kiddo. It's usually a boy, just to be stereotypical. You know, that's hyperactive. They're crawling, you know, climbing the walls and their behavior all, and they've got all kinds of issues. And the teachers are like, you need to get them evaluated. We need some meds on board. You know, they're all over the phone with that. But with people with the inattentive type, they tend to be this, you know, spacing out, daydreaming type. So, you know, the teachers are like, oh, they're so well behaved. They're great in class. And, you know, they do pretty well, except for a couple subjects where they just need a little extra help. So they kind of fly under the radar, and then, you know, academics get more intense, hormones get more intense by the time they're teens, and that just exacerbates or makes worse some of the symptoms, you know, that were already there.
So we've identified two different types, right? And there can be a combination between those two different types. But when we're thinking about how behavioral health professionals, whether it's therapists or licensed clinical social workers or whatever, how they might interact with folks, what are the things that people tend to get wrong, even on the professional side, when it comes to helping people understand their diagnosis and also, you know, living with ADHD?
I don't know if it's just clinicians that get it wrong, but I just think some of the misnomers about it is like, well, they're not hyperactive. It's like, well, you know, even though H is now in the diagnosis, it used to be ADD and now it's ADHD. The hyperactivity is actually the energy in our brains that's just kind of like super fast, right? Our brains move super fast. Whether our bodies match that, it's kind of irrelevant. It's a neurological condition and it's not a behavioral condition. So I think a lot of people look at it as like behaviors and, you know, they just can't pay attention, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, again, it's, they're not seeing the hyperactivity, they're not seeing the behaviors, so they just assume, oh, they're fine, and, you know, they're just, they don't like math, or they're lazy, or, you know, they're unmotivated. So it can kind of look a lot of different ways when it's not the traditional hyperactive type that people see most often.
And so when we're thinking about how we should go about treating it, right, like what are the steps? What are the steps that you do from when you're first, you know, evaluating or assessing somebody to being able to work with somebody to help them cope, to learn new life skills? Like, what does that process look like?
Yeah, it's just, you know, your usual clinical interview. And obviously the DSM will help back some of that up. But I have a little cheat sheet of some uncommon signs that I kind of notice. So if I know that the kid's really like a good-hearted kid and they are doing really, really well in a lot of subjects, you know, a lot of these kids that I see are like AP, honors, advanced, and they're in like a million different, you know, activities. They're very high functioning because they work really hard, right? So some of those red flags that I see is, are they taking 3 hours every night on one subject? Like that they're in tears because they can't figure it out no matter how many different ways they try to, you know, get it. You know, it's just like, it's very blatantly obvious. They'll be acing everything and then failing like one subject. Because trying to do something that you don't like when you have ADHD is more than just, I don't like it. It's literally like banging your head against the wall. I mean, it is really frustrating to try to learn a new concept that isn't natural to you. It takes a lot of extra effort. And some kids are so good and they want to do so well, they work and they do that extra work. And then they end up sleep deprived, staying up late doing their homework, can't focus, they end up doing 50 different tasks while they're doing their homework. Another thing is that they have to listen to music or do another activity while they're doing it. Just stuff like that is more of like the academic side of it, what you can tell from what they, tell you about school.
Can you dive a little bit deeper into that? Because the second part, when it comes to the listening to music thing, because I used to be a teacher and we used an incentive like for good behavior or for people, fulfilling their responsibilities around the classroom, that they could listen to music. But there was always something that was like inherently made me feel like this is not a good thing, because in my own mind, I'm like, how can I read words when I have other words in my ear? Like if somebody was whispering something to me in my ear, I would find it really hard to concentrate on anything, right? So like, it seems like some of this is about being able to tune out other things and being able to focus more when we have certain stimuluses. So can you kind of like unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, I guess it depends on their learning style too, right? If someone's more like visual, they might be able to tune out some of the auditory. But with ADHD, it's kind of like you always have so much going on at the same time that anything less just feels like very uncomfortable is the best way that I can explain it for some kids, or for some people. So for some people, they might say, oh, it helps me focus. But if you can see clearly that that's what they're just listening or they're not getting it done, it depends on the kid. So it's hard in the classroom to cater to that. So many kids have such individual needs. So I see that being very challenging for teachers. And that's where having those extra support services like an IEP or a 504 plan can be helpful if they need a separate space, extra time, to get some of that stuff done on their own terms. That's not going to disturb other kids. They can use their fidgets without bothering.
Can you speak on the impulsivity and how that plays a role in ADHD?
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of the DSM will talk about the criteria of like interrupting people or, just acting on impulse without thinking. It's usually just saying things that, are off the cuff or out of context, because there's so many unrelated thoughts going on all the time. Or, like you were just saying, like, I was just thinking about something else while I was doing this, what I had to do for the rest of the day. And that's just because the brain is just moving so fast. The criteria says as if you're driven by a motor. So like trying to stop a car.
And it can be tricky because adolescents are already going through, a specific stage of development and socially, behaviorally, emotionally. And so being impulsive, and not paying attention all the time can be kind of typical adolescent behavior. So I think it's important to kind of figure out how to distinguish between actually ADHD and just being a teenager, right? Like, do you ever see misdiagnosis or overdiagnosis of ADHD?
I don't know. In my practice, it seems that I just spot it so quickly. And, because I have it and I'm a clinician, I've been working primarily in this population. And I feel like for me, in my opinion, it's underdiagnosed because people are like, oh, I don't want them to get the diagnosis because I don't want them to take medication. But it's not even about taking medication necessarily. It's about recognizing that this is an actual learning disability and a neurological condition that needs to be addressed, whether it be through, craniosacral therapy or using more mindfulness or non-stimulant medications. I mean, people just think ADD, oh, they're looking for medication. Oh, I'm not going to put my kids on, medications. But if you don't have the information, then it's harder to treat. So I feel like it doesn't get treated because parents are trying to stay away from that label and not medicate their kids. So they actually aren't seeking out the diagnosis and supports as often as they should.
Yeah, I do notice a direct, correlation with general public about, oh, ADHD, then you need to go on Adderall or you need a stimulant. And, we all know that, especially if an adolescent has a comorbidity or co-occurring diagnosis, then a stimulant can oftentimes, be detrimental. So I think it's definitely important to have some behavioral modifications and utilize other interventions. So
let's talk about some of those interventions, right? Like let's kind of break those down. So you talked about some of the things that are within the DSM that, and some of the things that are not necessarily in the DSM, but that you've noted from your experience. And so after you've done this assessment, you're like, yo, this kid's got ADHD for sure. Like, it makes all the sense. You know, they're spending 3 hours on their math homework, and they're having trouble being able to pay attention without some other type of stimulus. And any type of calm feels just like uncomfortable for this kid, right? So then what's next step? And like, I guess kind of a, like a side question of this is, you know, there's people who are like, hey, ADHD is treatable, right? Right. But is it like conquerable? Is it something that you kind of like look back on, or is it something that you learn to live with?
Yeah. And can you grow out of ADHD?
So what happens is our brains start to fully form right around 25 or so. But with ADHD, let's call it 30. You know, it takes a long time to learn what they call compensatory behaviors. So your brain's fully formed. You've been getting by so long without it. Let's say you don't have a diagnosis, but you've been learning ways to compensate for it. Writing things down when you think about them right in that moment, remembering to grab something right in that moment, making lists. I mean, you find a way, right, to compensate for your shortcomings. You know, whether you're aware you have ADHD or not, you find a way. And if you don't, then, you know, you're more likely to get someone to recommend that you get more help. But yeah, I think you never, like, so I didn't have ADD. I have ADHD. It's neurological. It's lifelong. But I, you know, you learn what to do with it if you're given the right supports and, you know, are aware of your diagnosis.
No, that's good. Let's talk about unpacking those supports, right? So, okay, I can learn to live with this. What are the supports that are specifically helpful when it comes to working with the team with ADHD and helping them to be able to, you know, reduce the symptoms that come along with that, or to be more high functioning?
Like some tactile interventions or concrete examples of, you know, what you would actually kind of do with someone for an adolescent.
Sure. So I'm like I always start very basic because 9 times out of 10, there's a sleep issue, right? They're like staying up all night to do their homework. So then, you know, they're tired the next day and then the cycle keeps repeating, right? So I try to tweak their sleep schedule. It's like, all right, so you're going to bed at 1 a.m. and you're waking up at 6. That's not enough sleep, right? So they're just like, no, but I love staying up late. That's why I have my energy and I can get things. I'm like, okay, fine. Can we move your bedtime back like 10 minutes? You know, can we tweak that a little bit? And, you know, can we add healthier things? Like, okay, so before you go to bed, could we just maybe turn off the screen just a little earlier? I'm not saying no screens at all, right? And I just try to negotiate those things with them. And then they start to see the benefits and they're like, all right, I'll try this. I'm all about like Maslow's hierarchy, right? So we started with the sleep. They forget to eat all the time. Forget to eat. That's a big thing that I hear. Like, oh, okay, so they don't know that they're hungry because they're so hyper-focused on whatever they're doing, or they've had too much coffee and it, like, can't tell that they need to eat anything. So, you know, just making sure, hey, can you, like, just make sure to grab a granola bar for the morning, you know, something simple like that so that you can actually focus and not get sick and focus on what you need to do for the day. You know, just small interventions like that. And then I'm all about this little handout you can find online. It's called 50 Ways to Take a Break. Because they don't take a break. They hyper-focus, they're doing things for hours and hours, or they're totally distracted for too long, and because they need to take care of their bodies somehow. So we're using mindfulness, tactile sensory strategies to center them. A weighted blanket, or figuring out what fidgets they like, what meditation apps they might like to take a break. Because I think that they just sometimes just go too hard and then just burn themselves out and shut down.
So it seems like when it comes to, you know, working with someone with ADHD, like you said, starting on the basics, starting with like Maslow's hierarchy, are you eating food? Are you getting sleep, right? Because if those two things are off, then we're gonna really challenge. And then also, like, are we taking breaks, right? And what's interesting to me about ADHD is that we talk about it as like attention deficit, like I can't pay attention, when really it seems like it's not always about attention deficit, but it's attention on something else, right? You talked about that hyper focus, and I get that, right? Like, just focusing on something. Whether or not it's the thing that you need to be focusing on is a whole other story. So, you know, can you kind of like explain that nuance, right? That it's not always about, you know, not being able to focus on anything, but it's focusing on not maybe not controlling what you're focusing on. Like, what does that mean?
Yeah, so it's like being able to focus on one thing at a time, I think, is the big thing. It's like you're supposed to be doing this, but then squirrel, right? You know, it's kind of like that. It's like, oh, yeah, but wait, what about this? So it could be either, you know, an activity that you're supposed to focus on, or it could be unrelated thoughts, like because your brain just going a million different directions. So it could be like a physical stimuli. It could be a sound, just depending on how you learn and how you process. And I think that's pretty much it. It's just you have trouble multitasking, or like you have a problem with too much multitasking so that you can't do what you actually need to do. And it, obviously, it's harder to focus on things that we don't prefer to focus on, right? We'd rather be doing fun stuff.
Do you find that the clients you work with who have ADHD, are they more susceptible or prone to having anxiety and depression?
Absolutely. Yeah. And a lot of the same strategies that I'm working on with Maslow help with all those things too, right? So what's interesting about ADHD and depression is sometimes when you treat the ADHD, you notice that the depression lifts, right? Because sometimes ADHD is like not meeting your quota for stimulation. So if you're understimulated all the time, you're bored, it kind of feels like you're depressed, right? And it's like, well, why am I this way? And then they start beating themselves up because they're different. So once they can get that under control, participate better socially, that depression starts to lift a little bit. And I notice that, you know, as soon as they start taking medication or using their interventions or both, you know, that sometimes that depression starts to get much better too.
I could also see similarities with anxiety. If you treat the ADHD, then some of the symptoms of anxiety can dissipate too. I'm sure you notice that often, but I've also been hearing more and more about that on TikTok of all social media outlets, whether that, because we all know that all the information on TikTok is 100% accurate. There is no false information on TikTok, but I've been noticing a lot of trends around just like ADHD and how that, you know, mimics anxiety and depression. And when you treat one, the other kind of help, you know, the symptoms of the other kind of tends to kind of dissipate. So it's interesting though, you know. You tend to sometimes look at these things in like a vacuum. So, but it's really treating the whole everything together and getting those basic human needs met first, like sleep and nutrition and all the things that sometimes we don't always, you know, handle. So
you bring up a really funny point, Lindsay, talking about TikTok. And there's this media campaign within TikTok where it's like, I learned this on TikTok. That's like the hashtag, or learned on TikTok, or TikTok taught me, right? I think that's it. And it's interesting because like on the one hand, it's like a convenient way to be able to get information, like you said, and also build awareness for different things. Like I know a lot of people who have talked about, hey, like I didn't know that this was something that I could be dealing with until somebody like kind of brought this up on social media on TikTok. And so when we're thinking about like social media and the effects that has on ADHD, I'm just curious, like if you have any insight, any perspective, like what have you seen the relationship between ADHD and social media been like?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that not just people with ADHD, but it's just a very easy way to get sucked into distraction. It's like, it's very informational and helpful in a lot of ways. And I like speaking to lessening stigma. It's huge because like, oh my gosh, so many people are liking this and they're like relating to it. And that part's great because you need that when you have ADHD. You feel isolated and you feel different. And then on the flip side, it's like you can just get into a rabbit hole. And with ADHD, when you're in that hyper-focus mode, you lose time. So you could be like trying to get ready and then you've got TikToks going and you're like, oh my gosh, it's like 3 o'clock. I was supposed to leave half an hour ago because you're like so immersed in it. And then the other piece to maybe not just social media, but just like YouTube or like watching clipped little videos, I feel like it really feeds into that need for like instant gratification. So as opposed to watching like just a movie that's kind of like the same pace. But like when we're constantly getting fed, it's kind of addictive to have that, you know, that dopamine rush from watching videos over and over and over again, or like for a long period of time. So here and there, I think it's great and it's educational and fun and love it, but it has its purpose. But yeah, at the same time, some of that can worsen some of the focus issues with ADHD.
Speaking of social media, I wouldn't be surprised if, and there may already be some studies that have been out or that will come out, but I feel like moving forward, there will be more and more studies coming out with like linking anxiety, depression, increased symptoms of ADHD to social media. Because like you said, you just, the instant gratification feeds off each other, and it's so much easier to just there and scroll TikTok for hours versus watching a movie, you know, because you're continuously getting fed new information, and it probably releases, you know, chemicals in the brain that, you know, controlled substances, you know, do. So, and for someone whose brain isn't developed, it's even harder to kind of implement those boundaries. So parents literally have to be like, I'm taking your phone away, you know, for an hour so you can do this. And it's harder for adolescents to take breaks.
Yeah, that whole break thing makes a lot of sense if like the breaks are something that's not done. With folks with ADHD, that's challenging, right? Because that's a huge part about being able to regulate your emotions, your feelings, the chemicals in your body to have, you know, kind of more balance, right? I want to kind of backtrack to something you said earlier. And one of the things you mentioned is that, like, particularly for girls with ADHD, obviously you have your own experience of growing up with ADHD, but why is particularly for girls with ADHD, why is that a passion for you? Like, why is that something that that you tend to focus on and spend some time thinking about?
Yeah, just because it gets overlooked easier, I think, with the, you know, female population, just because of the fact that it tends to be more often than not always, right? The inattentive type, where you just see more of like the daydreaming, and then they're well behaved, but then they like miss things and space out. You know, it's like very like sweet and like it doesn't bother anybody, so nobody's saying anything about it. And they do well. And, you know, sometimes young girls can be more people pleasing socially. So they don't want to upset anybody. So they kind of keep to themselves, or they, you know, they just push through and they don't want to like be a bother. So they don't ask for help. You know, it's kind of just more of like how we're socialized. That makes it a little tougher to see that they need help. And I just don't want to let them be left under the radar. I want to be their advocate and make sure that they do get the help they need, and they don't have to struggle as hard as they do.
And for our professionals out there, for, you know, all the folks who are working with this population, what do you want them to really know when it comes to ADHD? Like, what is the thing that you want to leave them with that to impress on their mind when they're, you know, the next time they're talking with somebody and they're presenting symptoms that seem like this could be someone with ADHD? What do you want them to know?
Just to proceed with caution, because I think most of the time when I bring it up, parents automatically kind of go into denial mode, and like just being careful about how you approach it with the parents. You know, just having a very curious attitude about, I'm like, hey, did you notice that maybe like that they kind of space out a bit, or like, I'm just wondering about their attention. Have you ever thought about that? It's just it's a delicate balance with the parents, because they carry a lot of guilt when it comes to like having a late diagnosis. Let's call it 16. You know, like it's not really late, but there probably were some signs that they missed. So not making them feel bad about that, and just being, yeah, it's so easy to fly under the radar, and I get why you don't see it because of all these stereotypical presentations, but I'm wondering if there's something there, because I really want to support your daughter or your child and get them the help that they need to work through some of this stuff. And but yeah, I get a lot of pushback at the beginning, but then when we actually go for testing, if they don't believe me, you know, then, you know, the proof is in the pudding. But yeah, that's why those tests exist. You know, if you have any questions about it, send them out. And there's some really cool questionnaires online and different resources and websites that are really helpful for both providers and for parents.
And we'll make sure to link to those in the show notes in the description box below, so that you can use them as a resource for any of the teens or parents that you're working with. Lauren, it's been really awesome talking with you today. Where can people go to learn more about you and the awesome work that you do?
So as far as where I actually do practice with adolescents, it's DuPage Counseling Associates, and we're located in Glen Allen, Illinois. So we can provide that website. And then my day job during the day for Linden Oaks is a behavioral health navigator. So primarily my role is to connect patients in our hospital network that have been identified as having some symptoms of anxiety, depression, or what have you, and connecting them with community providers.
All right. Well, listeners, watchers, we're going to put links to all of to Lauren's private practice, as well as all the other cool resources that she's mentioned in the description box in the show notes below. And look, y'all, this whole ADHD thing, it's real, but it's also more common than you think. But most of all, with the help of awesome professionals like Lauren, it's treatable. We will see you on the next episode.